There was an age, a time when people stared idly into their monitors. They dreamt of a day when something would break the silence and free them from the monotony of balancing credits and debit. Suddenly from the silence rang out a podcast that reviewed bad movies. This is the 1000th version of that podcast. Let's talk movies, I guess. Welcome to Let's Talk Movies, I guess. By now you'll have heard our theme song, which is at this point a surprise to us, but I'm sure it's very catchy. I'm joined, maybe per usually, I don't know, but I'm joined with a couple of guests tonight. You're familiar with Joel if you're coming from the Enlightened Gamer podcast. Joel, if you want to say hey.
Howdy, howdy.
And a guest on the show, on the Enlightened Gamer podcast, Ryan.
Hey, how's it going?
And tonight we're talking about at least Top Gun 2, and maybe I think we're going to delve into some interesting theories about Top Gun that I'm sure a lot of you didn't realize or didn't know about the movie. And I have my own, and I think Joel has one, and hopefully those are going to be kind of interesting. I think in keeping with a similar format to Enlightened Gamer, I want to go ahead and start with Joel. Are you watching any interesting movies or TV recently?
This is crazy. Because I think we're going to do an episode on this one soon, but I'm watching Roadhouse, so I can have like context on that. I've never seen Roadhouse, and man, that is a really interesting movie already. So
yeah, I think like
I'm about 40 minutes into it.
You and I growing up in the same house, there's no way we would have seen that movie by the time we would have been out of the house. And then I don't know. I think like for a lot of kids growing up in trailer parks, that's probably like the first pair of 80s boobs they ever see is in that movie. So. That was not our experience growing up. So that movie escaped us for a long time. I watched it for the first time less than a week ago. And you're right, it's an interesting movie. That's maybe all you can say about it, in my opinion.
And we have the advantage of being able to watch it as like middle-aged people 30 years after it came out.
Well, I don't know how much Squidbillies you watch. They have an episode where they're obsessed with the movie Roadhouse. And Early talks about they've watched it like 4 or 5 times that day. And he goes, he's like, Rusty, how many damn times have we watched Roadhouse today? He goes, 5. And he's like, and why did we watch the movie that many times? He goes, because Patrick Swayze is a man and he kicks ass and he takes names. And and then basically a really fat amputee shows up who's like supposed to be a Patrick Swayze imposter. Like he's pretending to be Patrick Swayze. And they talk a lot about Roadhouse, and like there were some inside jokes that I didn't understand listening to that episode the first time. He goes, and like it's just a joke where he's coming off of telling them a story, and he goes, and that's why I brought an extra pair of tires, the Double Deuce, because I knew they were going to slash my tires, which is really funny because I'm like, is that a legitimate part of the movie? But now I've watched it, and I'm like, oh, his tires get slashed, and then inexplicably he has new tires, so... I understand that joke now, and I appreciate Squidbillies as a show even more than I had previously.
I think my favorite part is blind Jeff Healey is able to, after a song in stride, go, his name's Dalton. Like, he just knows that.
He smelled him.
The Dalton aura is there with him. So, I don't know.
Well, that ties into one of my theories. I think we are going to have an episode about that. So let's not give too much away about it. Brian, are you watching any interesting movies or watching anything?
I think the last movie I saw was The Night Before in theaters, but I would say Roadhouse is definitely one of my favorites, even though I was in the same boat as you and didn't see it until college. But I think I'm going to watch that this weekend, probably.
I mean, it's hailed as being a bad movie. Is that why you like it, or do you think it's good?
I just think it's an awesome like action flick. Like, yeah, I definitely align with Squidbillies in this one about how awesome Patrick Swayze is.
He is awesome in that movie, but he's confusing too because it seems like he's the guy who can kick anybody's butt, but he always waits too long to do anything. Like, he watches a lot of things happen before he really gets involved. So, well, like, I'm confused at least a little bit by that.
It is very confusing that he comes from, like, he was like a philosophy professor, wasn't he? Like, before he came.
Yes. Okay. So,
spoil the 30-year-old movie, bro.
In a pivotal scene where you have to put together a lot of Dalton's character. By the way, Dalton, you never hear his first name in the entire movie, but it's James. So his name is James Dalton. So, like, I think he is supposed to be, like, understood as being kind of highbrow or snooty almost, which is weird because, like, he does karate moves and cowboy boots in this movie. So he's just a very interesting character. He drives a Mercedes, like a very new Mercedes for the time this movie comes out. And then he stows it because he knows he's going to have to buy another car because his tires are going to get slashed and people are going to write offensive words on the side of his car and mess up his antenna.
That is 65 Rivera, Buick Rivera.
Right. So I don't know what we're supposed to understand about this character, but I think that's more exposition or some things that come together when we meet the female lead in the movie, Kelly Lynch's character. And I forget what her name is. Elizabeth Doc. Something. But yeah, they call her Doc.
I think the interesting thing, too, is watching this movie 30 years later. The Mercedes is cool and stuff, but that old Buick is awesome. It's like,
way cooler. And, like, the comparison is probably, like, that's like he went to a car dealership and picked up a Pontiac Fiero or something. And, like, that Buick Riviera or whatever it was way cooler than that Mercedes, which is not aged well. I mean, it's definitely
right.
A mid-80s car or whatever.
And then like, the lines that I'm guessing were, like, supposed to be clever for the day, like, pain don't hurt. I mean, like, that's just so, like...
Yeah, it doesn't translate well today. I don't know. I'm sure that's still on, like, everyone's top 250 movie quotes list, but pain don't hurt. I do remember him
saying... I don't even know that's exactly what he says, but it's something like that.
Yeah, I don't know. But there's a couple different nice quotables in that movie.
Well, Brian, I think we got to save some material for that episode, though.
Well, Brian, you've seen it more than once, right?
Oh, yeah. I've 4 or 5, at least.
Do you have anything that sticks with you particularly from that movie?
I think what, like, hit me the most was I was like, oh, you know, there's this guy. And I, like, when in my shoes, when I start seeing this movie in college, I'm just, like, starting to, like, go to bars and do that kind of thing, and now I'm seeing, like, this bar, like, atmosphere that he's dealing with, and I'm just, like, it kind of made me scared at points, and then just, like, how violent it gets, like, right in the middle of the movie. It's just, like, holy cow, and then, I mean, it didn't interfere with my bar activities, but, you know, it really put that into perspective.
Well, that's something I thought was really funny, is that one of the lines is, it's the kind of place we sweep up the eyeballs at night, right? Like, every night. So,
yeah.
And then you get there at the beginning of the movie, and it is. It's a very typical, like, Western biker bar, and it's just really rambunctious, and everyone's waiting for a fight to happen, and one does while Dalton's there. But I guess he's not on the clock yet because it doesn't seem to do anything. But, yeah, a fight breaks out the first night, and you're like, man, this is a really redneck hillbilly bar, like, concrete floors. It's just really bad. And I don't know how long this movie's time frame is. It seems like all these events take place in a week. But the bar by the end of the week is remodeled to be like a quintessential 1980s bar. So, like, with neon lights and everything, it's just a completely different... Well, something I know to be true about the movie now, it's a completely different set, but it looks like a completely different place. So that was a lot of work put in by the wrecking crew, considering I don't think they closed the bar even one night, so... Good on them. Yeah, I don't know. That's all I want to say about Roadhouse, because I have a feeling I'll be talking about it for at least an hour here very soon.
Yeah, it's a must see, I think. I mean, like, I feel like I've missed out by not watching it until I was in my 30s.
Yeah, it really is. If nothing else, for Sam Elliott. Sam Elliott does something that you won't see in any other movie. And he makes it look even kind of cool, even looking back on it very retro now and almost ironic and being like, this movie's terrible. But Sam Elliott puts his hair into a ponytail before he gets into a fight. And you're like, man, that was really tough. Like, I don't think I've ever seen anyone put their hair in a ponytail and then fight.
Yeah, but
I think the part...
The era of the man bun is coming back. So, I mean, if you go out now, you might see that. But I blame the man bun.
Oh, this movie's going to come back into some popularity within the next, you know, few years.
I think the part that I want to make sure we put a pin in when we do the full episode is, does Dalton think he needs to get stabbed before every fight to make it fair, or how does that work? Like,
I think it is. I think it's like a crutch for him. It makes him feel the challenge again or whatever. That's part
he's like,
of
all
it.
Right, you get one free stab, then we're going to fight.
And I want to talk about Dalton's questionable sexual orientation, but that's going to take a little bit longer time to get through, I think. So let's move on to our side dish tonight, which I think is the announcement of Top Gun 2 and the confirmation that both Tom Cruise and Val Kilmer have signed on to do the movie.
Allegedly. I mean, like, and I think it's been, Top Gun 2 has been, like, I think in the works for, like, maybe the last, I don't know, 6 years or something. But
probably since Top Gun the Musical.
Well, the, actually, Jerry Bruckheimer is, like, on the record saying, I've been trying to make this sequel for 30 years now.
Well, okay, so do you have an idea of plot at all? I mean, I have an idea of where I would head if I was writing this movie. Well,
the actual plot, I think they were writing a script for it, and the script was going to be, like, basically drones versus pilots, like that drones were phasing out pilots and that there's still a place for pilots. And it's all supposed to take place in like the F-35 Lightning II, which is the Joint Strike Fighter, which I could talk for an hour about that. But
that's on our aviation podcast. So
now yeah, let's talk airplanes, I guess.
Well, I hope that's not you taking a jab at the name of my podcast, but yeah, I'll see if it's available. LTAPIG or just yeah. All right. Well, you know, I saw something interesting recently, which is that the A-10 Warthog, and I don't know if this is true, but the way that like the meme went and kind of, I'm looking at the history of the plane, they built a really awesome gun and then they right. built the plane around it. Is that true?
Completely true. Completely true.
Yeah, I heard
like,
that too.
That's they're like, awesome.
This is an awesome gun platform, and I mean, this is an awesome gun, and we're going to build a platform around it. And actually, that gun that sticks out the front looks like a cigar, you know, that the thing's smoking or whatever. That gun actually runs the whole length of that plane, practically, which is kind of awesome.
Well, something that's really neat, if you hold down, they have to only run that gun for, like, 2 seconds at most.
Right.
Because if they hold it down any more than that, the plane loses all forward velocity. Like, so
it stalls it.
Yeah,
it stalls
the plane out. Exactly. It's so powerful that it can actually stall the plane by shooting bullets backward.
Well, that plane had a really long service life, too. I mean, like, there's planes that have been longer, like the U-2 and stuff.
But I saw one today. I saw one flying by today. There's an A-10 Warthog base in Fort Wayne for any, like, anyone listening in ISIS or whatever. But, allegedly, I don't know. But I definitely saw an A-10 flying by today.
If you're allegedly like, listening.
Cool. No, I meant there's allegedly an A-10 base. I'm sure that's very well on the record. If I know about it, then it's, you know, it's not a matter of, like, top secret confidentiality. They fly these planes around Fort Wayne all the time.
If you haven't watched Top Gun, like, go watch Top Gun. Because I'm going to go on the record saying Top Gun is my favorite movie of all time.
That's a bold claim. It's been in my top five for a very long time. And I run away from being like, no, there are other movies in my top five. But there are no other movies. There's no other movie that I've watched as much as I've watched Top Gun, with maybe the exception of That Thing You Do. So, like, if That Thing You Do is my number one movie, Top Gun is my number two. And those two movies are so dissimilar, it's, you know, insane. But those are easily the two movies I've watched the most in my life.
I don't know what your excuse is, but the reason why I like it so much is because I was 7 years old when this movie came out. So
I think that was about the first time I ever saw it. It was in that, like, 7 to 10 range. Where I was like, oh my gosh, this is obviously the height of masculinity. Everyone in this movie is like so heterosexual, it's crazy. and since then I've maybe developed some new opinions, but I still love the movie, still love the soundtrack, still love everything about it, and how completely it's the apotheosis of like an 80s movie. So I don't know. There's a word, smart word for you.
Here's my theory. Here's my theory about Top Gun, okay? I'm going to go ahead and just come out with it. I think Top Gun was written at a campfire. Like, I think they had a flashlight at a campfire and they were telling a ghost story, but it was Top Gun. And they passed the flashlight around. It was like that thing where you pass the flashlight and finish the story. So it starts off by, once there was a fighter pilot who went against a MiG.
His and name passed the was flashlight Cougar. Off. He was the bravest and strongest fighter pilot. And then you passed it to his friend who's like, But Ooh. Cougar became a total pansy, and the real hero came out, Maverick.
Yeah, but Maverick killed his co-pilot.
Yeah, but Cougar still, like, made it onto the aircraft carrier and was still alive, and, that does make sense as to why this movie is so completely disjointed.
Think about it. The movie is, hey, we're gonna encounter some MiGs, then you're gonna go to flight school, then you're gonna have flight school, then you're gonna kill someone.
The really cool camp counselor definitely got his first time with the flashlight as soon as, like, the commander of the aircraft carrier started talking. And I was like, oh man, that's such a, like, cool older kid thing to say. He's like, you're gonna be flying a cargo plane full of rubber dog shit to Hong Kong or whatever. I was like, oh my gosh, he just said a swear word. He's so cool. And then I think, like, really the swearing starts to pick up from that point. So, like, yeah, I think your campfire theory holds pretty true at this point, because it got back to the kid at the beginning, who was like, Cougar was the greatest fighter pilot of all time. And then he was like, and then Cougar safely landed his plane because Maverick helped him back. And then the other kid was like, but then Cougar was like all pansy about it. And then is like, my wife and my family. And then he quit the Air Force immediately. And Maverick went to Top Gun flight school. So,
and then there's one girl in the circle around the campfire who was like, she only had one contribution. And her contribution was, and then Charlie said, you won't be happy unless you're going Mach 2 with your hair on fire.
Yeah, she like snuck over from the girls' camp, and then like that was her contribution. Or like, hey guys, I think there should be a female character. And they're like, all right, that's fine. We're gonna name her Charlie.
Oh man.
Yeah, I don't know.
She's gonna be a particularly masculine female.
She will be, and there's gonna be a particularly upsetting sex scene later where you're not sure if it's a male and a female body, or like two male bodies, or what exactly is going on. You know, there's a lot of tongue kissing in the beginning, and then it might be like a man in a wig, and then it might definitely be two men, you know, groping at each other and wrestling on a mattress.
I definitely think that this movie, you have to, my voice did something fun there. This movie, you have to acknowledge that there is some really disgusting kissing in it. Like, there's more, like, licking teeth type kissing in this movie than any other movie I've seen.
Oh my gosh, yeah. There's so many, like, so much attention paid to people's mouths in this movie. And, like, when Iceman is biting constantly. Like, I don't know if he has more lines or more clenching of his teeth.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, like, so much attention is put on that. Even, like, Tom Cruise's kind of ugly teeth in this movie. And there's a lot of just close-up shots and stuff. And, yeah, exactly, there's the worst tongue kissing of all time. That, like, is so disturbing that, I don't know, like,
I'm glad you mentioned that Tom Cruise teeth thing, because once you notice that Tom Cruise's, like, teeth are shifted over by one whole space of, like, teeth in his mouth,
yeah,
like, so his, like, middle teeth are, like, actually, like, under his, like, right nostril, you can't not see that the rest,
like,
of the movie.
And he's still a much better looking guy in his 50s or whatever age he is now than I am currently in my 20s, but, yeah, he definitely, like, there's something up with his teeth. They're not, like, perfect Hollywood chiclet teeth. And I'm talking about the pilot Hollywood in this movie, which is also my brother's call sign for this episode. So if you hear me refer to him as Hollywood and Brian as Wolfman, then that's probably why.
Wolfman, what do you think of Top Gun?
I'm actually kind of sad to hear you guys think that about all the kissing, because I think that was one of the my more formative movies to learn how to kiss. And, I mean, maybe I'm doing it wrong even today.
No, it's exactly how you should kiss if they have, like, Hawaiian punch on their gums.
it's a very passionate form of kissing that doesn't oft make it into movies. And maybe it was just too real for me. Let me ask you guys a question real quick. If you had to put a rating with this movie, what do you think it's rated in America?
Like, the... like
the ESRB or whatever, the MS
MAPP MPAA or whatever it is.
Yeah, I think it's MPAA. I'd say
what
PG-13.
Yeah, okay. PG-13 is my guess too. PG. Well, maybe PG-13 might not have been out at that time yet.
It's PG, true. So I don't know if that explains it to me. This is probably the movie that they're like, you can't have this kind of tongue kissing and two men having sex in a bed. without giving this a PG-13 rating.
I think Raiders of the Lost Ark was the movie that challenged PG ratings, if I remember right. But
was it like the melting of the Nazi skin, like at the end, or what?
I don't know.
I think it was 19.
Yeah, I don't know.
A quick Google fact check says it was the Gremlins in 1984
that pushed them to make the PG-13 rating.
Well, I think Gremlins might have been the first PG-13 movie, but I heard they like came up with the PG-13 rating because of Raiders of the Lost Ark. I don't know. That's something that, like, I'm sure that one of our millions of fans that listen to this will send us a correction on.
Oh yeah, we'll be faithfully waiting for that comment,
and we thank them for that.
Thank you.
Really, really appreciate that.
Thank you, loyal fan. I hope you enjoyed our theme music. Well, we know we love it. We know it's a thing.
How old were you when you saw this movie first, Brian?
This is my older brother's most favorite movie in the world. So like, I probably watched it like. It feels like every other weekend from like maybe 10 on until he left for college.
Yeah?
Yeah. Your older brother is not older than you by like 10 years or anything either, by the way. I think that's worth note. Yeah. Your older brother is like a few years older than
two and a half, I think.
Right. Yeah. Between two and three. So.
So he's also our cousin, and it's really surprising that this is his favorite movie of all time. Not terribly surprising, but I guess a little surprising.
Oh yeah, he even got the soundtrack and everything, which like isn't bad, but like I just watched it so many times.
There's a Kenny Loggins album. Is that what he got?
Yes, that's exactly
there's a lot
it.
Of masculine things going on in this movie, like shirtless volleyball happens once, and it seems like it takes forever. It seems like a really long scene, but I'm sure it's less than 2 minutes. And they're playing kind of a passionate song in the background and things during that scene, I think. And that's actually where I got the high five that I used through all of my high school years, which is something that Maverick and Goose do in that scene.
Was your high five, you'd high five someone and go, playing with the boys.
that was part of, I would sing that out loud, but Maverick has this thing where he goes up top, then back around downtown.
Oh, yeah.
And then he throws up a thumbs up at the end, too. It's really cool. There's no denying how cool that was, especially in the time. And I don't know, it's probably dated ironically now that it could probably be cool again.
So when you were playing volleyball in jeans and no shirt, would do that?
And my man boobs were flapping around and stuff. And I was trying to, recreate the magic of that scene, but also realized that I enjoy food a lot more than I enjoy working out. Which is going to be a problem, because Top Gun 2, if Val Kilmer has signed on to do this movie, what is he going to be doing? Is that something you've thought about?
Well, I know getting bariatric surgery beforehand.
I know it is, because before we were doing this podcast, an hour before, you were like, Val Kilmer signed on to do this movie, confirmed, and then you sent me a picture of the Star Wars character Jack Porkins. For those who don't know, who's the X-Wing fighter who's like morbidly
just
obese.
Just a little longer.
He had like the expanded double wide cockpit. And so he famously blows up by like running into a turret or something. I don't remember, but
he has a jowl extension on his straps on his helmet.
He does. And if it wasn't bad enough already, you hear me say the word or the name Jack Porkins and you're like, that can't be his real name. Ha ha ha. No, go look it up. In Star Wars lore, this character's name is Jack Porkins. His last name is Porkins. I'm sure that's like George Lucas having fun to be like, this guy's fat. Let's make his name something ridiculous. Or it was added like after the movie was out. But anyway, Val Kilmer is confirmed for this movie. What is he going to be doing?
I think him and Maverick are both going to be like the like jester and viper kind of people.
Flight instructors, right? That makes sense, except for one pretty crucial detail. In the first movie and in Top Gun, Brian, you've probably heard this line 35 times, at least, and maybe it's actually like stuck with you. What's the rule of Top Gun that doesn't allow Val Kilmer to come back as a flight or a Top Gun flight instructor?
I'm drawing a blank.
He didn't put you on the spot there, did he?
No.
I'm just testing his trivia of his having seen this movie 200 times. I'm sure that he knows every line of Viper's monologue, right?
I wish.
I thought they were like, if you won the competition, you were invited to come back as an instructor.
Exactly. So Iceman didn't win the competition. I don't think either that or Maverick didn't. He did. So Iceman did. So he
Maverick
could come back.
Win. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So Maverick, it doesn't make any sense for him to come back unless he's like having to go back through flight school because he blew up a school bus or something. Why is he back there then?
Because here's why. You got to remember this critical scene on Top Gun. Jester comes in, big old cigar in his mouth, goes, "Well, kid, you're gonna be. How's it feel to be on the front page of every newspaper in the free world?" And then something. You get your choice of duties. What are you gonna do? Well, I'm thinking about being a flight instructor. Ah, Top Gun. God help us all, or whatever he says. I don't know.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I was thinking about flying a cargo plane full of dog shit out of Hong Kong. That's all I really wanted to do.
I was going to bring
come through this stupid flight school that I didn't really have any interest in.
I was going to bring boiling hot coffee to that poor SOB worker in the control tower. That was what I really wanted to do.
So, does this movie avoid the trope of Maverick is, like, flying in the wake of his father's greatness or something? Is there any attention paid to what Maverick's dad did?
No, I feel like that's part of the campfire theory again. It's like, oh, and also his dad's, like, an all-time great pilot that has mysterious circumstances around his death.
He does, that's right. And he feels guilt.
Yeah, because, like, this is, what, roughly, like, 10 years kind of after, like, Star Wars? And, like, you know, you think, like, oh, same kind of story, like, great father. But now, like, we're using the campfire.
Oh, my gosh. You just blew this theory wide open. Top Gun 2, Maverick's dad comes back, and he's Darth Vader.
Jester! Jester is his dad!
and Tom Cruise comes back, and he's struggling with, like, really bad male pattern baldness, I think. Jester had a full head of hair, I think.
I think he did. I've seen
this movie.
He wore a hat, like, the whole movie, I think.
He did. Well, yeah, that's right. He always had that, like, crazy decorated hat.
Here's my favorite thing about the movie that you don't think about, and then once you realize it, you're like, oh, that makes a good point. The guy's name is Jester, and he doesn't make a joke the whole time. I mean, like,
which is
he's the most
funny.
Solemn and stern character that they
so
have in the
So it's
movie.
Probably an ironic nickname, which is funny. But then, like, yeah, I knew you were going to bring up the call sign thing, because it's like every other call sign in this movie, too, is pretty tough. It's like if you're trying to think of synonymous call signs, you'd be like Rogue for Maverick, right? You'd be like, well, Goose is a bad example, I guess. He's
in Hollywood.
Hollywood, I don't know. He's a pretty boy, I guess. Even amongst these like super androgynous looking pilots or whatever. I don't know. I guess they can't be too androgynous looking. They like have technically tone and muscular bodies or whatever, but not a beard amongst the group. I don't know if that's like a flight regulation or what.
It probably is, so their mask can fit.
Shadow or whatever.
I think that's right. I think that's probably true to the... I mean, at one time, I think it was you couldn't get a good seal with a beard, so they didn't let you have a beard.
I guess that makes sense.
I if you look at the credits, like, the stunt pilots that flew these planes, like, from the Navy, it has their call signs on there. And, like, I was just curious, like, what their call signs were, if there were any crossovers or anything like that. And their call signs are, like, way more... I mean, they're definitely real call signs that way. And, like, they're, like, Asp and Adder and, like, just weird, like, I don't know.
So they're
just
all,
like,
all snakes.
Cobra. Not all of them. There's no Viper.
Viper. Yeah, because Viper's already taken.
Oh, yeah, my bad. No, they have, like, and, like, some of them are just, like.
Diamondback.
Some of them are just, like, weird, like, something else, or like two pronouns, like, well, he, she, I don't know, just weird stuff.
Back to my point of Jester being like, well, his is the only one that's like, what's the only synonym I can think of for Jester is like clown. So like he really gets
right
short shrifted in terms of like really cool call sign, but he does have a pretty cool helmet, I think, with like some stars on it and stuff. And he's not the coolest character, let's be honest. Anyway,
maybe you guys can explain this to me too. Like, this is something in this movie that always has troubled me. Like, they go off for that first, like, dogfight at Top Gun, and Pete Maverick, well, I don't even know what his
Lieutenant
last name is.
Pete Mitchell. Pete Maverick
Lieutenant
Mitchell.
Pete Maverick Mitchell. He kills Jester, but they're like, disqualified! He broke the 10,000-foot ceiling or floor or whatever.
The flight deck or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, I can take that. I mean, if you think about it, like, if they're actually, like, fighting over the ocean or something... Obviously, they don't want to go into the ocean, but, like, since they're in a training area, like, obviously, you gotta level it off at some point. It's like, if you transpose this into an ocean, then, like, yeah, he shot him, but then he would have crashed in the ocean and would have lost anyway.
Shouldn't they have the same critical aversion to, like, the ground, though?
Well, yeah, but, like, I'm just... At the end it's of the like movie is when they're, like, they're obviously over the ocean because they're the Navy
pilots.
Well, yeah,
okay. So the thing that Viper says about it afterwards is he goes that the top flight or top gun rules of engagement exist for the safety of yourself and that of your co-pilot and whatever. So it's obviously just, it's a rule for them at Top Gun training. I think there are, I mean, parameters and maybe rules of engagement in terms of like dogfighting, and probably they're related to things like not specifically the Geneva Convention, but like the Geneva Convention like rules of military dogfighting or something. So I'll bet that that's a real thing, but yeah, I mean, it's a really dumb, like, it's where the movie gets really technical for no reason, I guess. I mean, that part doesn't fit too much into the plot. Was that, I mean, did you have a point besides that?
No, I just, like, was always, like, frustrated by that. And then, like, watching it as an older person, like, you know, when you watch this as, like, a preteen or teen, like, you're just like, oh, man, these guys are so cool. I want to be them. Like, I want to be everything that Maverick is. And then, like, when you watch it, like, later in life, you kind of have this, like, thing of, oh, that's messed up that that's that way. And the other thing that I'm kind of like, oh, I never really caught that, is, like, the dirtbag in this movie, obviously, is Iceman. Like, he's just a terrible person. And, like, at the end, they make amends and, like, they're buddies or whatever. But, like, he's the reason why Goose is dead. I mean, it's not on Maverick. It's on Iceman. They should be, like, putting Iceman on trial because he, like, stayed in that, like, aggressive position where he didn't have a shot for, like, ever. And right. Then pulled off and, like, caused that, like,
caused
jet
a wake
stream
or whatever. And then, like, Maverick gets thrown out of the air. But you could contest that. I mean, Iceman could probably be like, well, why is he so far up my ass? Like, because he really is, probably. I mean, in terms of, like, the, again, Top Gun rules of engagement, I'm sure that's not a legal thing for him to be that close. And you're also saying, like, man, Iceman really is a dick or whatever. But, like, think about the part where Iceman is like, hey, you are dangerous. You are literally a dangerous pilot, and you are a Maverick, and I don't like you. Like, Tom Cruise does pull off some maneuvers that, in this movie, don't seem like they're that crazy or like they're kind of cheesy or whatever. In that same first scene you're talking about where Jester flies below like the safe flight deck or whatever, right? Under 10,000 feet. And so he shouldn't have been following him under there, which, I mean, as an instructor at the Top Gun flight school, that's kind of a dick move because, like, you know that, like, the pilots have to try
right.
to kill you. So, like, that's kind of cheating.
That's the part
like
that bugged me.
It's going out of bounds, and then it's like, and then Maverick shoots him with a Nerf gun, and he's like, but I was out of bounds. You can't do this or whatever. But, so, like, in that same scene, though, Maverick is like, I'm going to pull a maneuver here, and he, like, slams on this weird type of, like, air brake and stuff, and that's what makes him fly by. So, like, if you were flying with a wing or something like that, or, like, in coordination with other pilots, that's a pretty unexpected maneuver. So, I mean, like, Maverick is kind of a dick, too. So, like, I don't know that I pick Maverick as being cooler than Iceman or, like, more virtuous than the other.
And given that this is at, like, a training school, like, for him to pull that move in there, like, Jester definitely could have, like, rammed into him pretty easily with that, too. You know?
Oh, yeah, in a big way.
He's falling way behind him. So.
Yeah, yep, and, like, then Goose could have died, you know?
Yeah, that would have been terrible.
Yeah, I'm glad he didn't, though. It really, really made the movie much more.
Yeah, for anyone who hasn't seen the movie, like, I mean, Goose, the thing that Goose says at the end of the movie, I think is why this is, like, on everyone's top 100 list of movies, is, like, that big monologue he gives about how, like, Maverick might be, you know, like a wild card, but he's always there when you need him, and, like, he's, because, you know, Maverick saves Iceman against these 5 MiGs at the end of the movie. Spoilers, sorry. I guess I'm also spoiling the part where, like, Goose gives his, like, really, sorry, I get choked up at this part, a little bit, like, his heart-rending speech about, like, Maverick saved his life from alcoholism, and, like, basically made sure he was there as a good dad to, like, take care of his kid and stuff. Like, that part really just, I mean, I don't know, it really got to me. What do you guys think about that?
I don't know if I even remember that part.
Oh, wow, really?
I mean, I don't like to admit that I cry during movies, but, like, yeah, I mean, it was definitely a tearjerker.
Yeah, for sure. Man, that part just really gets me.
Are you talking about the part, like, where that no-name actress that plays Goose's wife is around there, like, that time?
No, you're thinking of, like, the piano scene where he plays Great Balls of Fire or whatever. And then, yeah, like, that bar floozy that, like, comes by or whatever. Blonde actress, whatever her name is. Yeah, she comes around. And I don't know what her name is. Nobody knows.
Let me look it up on IMDb. She Megan was in some, Ryan. Yeah. I guess she did some other movies.
She was in some, like, You Have Mail or something. It was, like, a promotional video for AOL. She played against the kid from... He did one episode of Tales from the Crypt. He directed it, and I think he starred in it. Tom Hanks or something.
Oh, the Bosom Buddies guy. Yeah.
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 Yep.
That's cool that you were able to get some work doing, like, infomercials for AOL.
Yeah, I don't, for sure. I don't know why AOL needed infomercials. I mean, they had, like, the best marketing campaign ever by sending out those CDs in every mail envelope. I'm pretty sure they partnered with the envelope people. And weren't they also in, like, cereal boxes, too?
Envelopes were made out of those discs,
You could pick them up at Walmart, at, like, the pharmacy counter and stuff. Yeah, they were everywhere. So, I mean, there's nowhere you could go to avoid having an AOL sample CD. And that explains why they're, like, still such a successful company. But, anyway, yeah, I think we're talking about, like, Top Gun and who's the protagonist and is Iceman a dick and that sort of thing.
I think Iceman, he's actually the good guy because he's considering the safety of the rest of his pilots. And obviously you're not going to like Maverick if he's, like, yeah, he's pulling all these ridiculous stunts that just puts everyone else in danger.
Well, and he's an unstable personality type. Iceman stays at the school. He flies, you know, uniformly through all of his missions and still gets the job done. He's called the Iceman because he doesn't make the mistake you do. And then
he's got ice in his veins.
Yeah, and that too. Like, that was kind of weird. And, like, then he had all those abilities where he could, like, stay in a freezer for a really long time.
He could slow down time with his mind.
Yeah, that part was weird too. I don't know. A lot of this stuff is coming from the deleted scene, so if none of it sounds familiar, then maybe that's why. Like, I should mention Ghost's scene where he does give the monologue at the end is, like, after a surprise, like, twist where, like, oh, gosh, it was a different pilot who hit the canopy and died, and then he comes back, like, in the last scenes of the movie.
Oh, wait. I remember that scene now where Goose does that speech. It's the part after the Wookiees are all doing the Wub-Nub dance and, like, his ghost appears next to Darth Vader and Obi-Wan's.
Oh, wow. You might be right. I never put that together. Like, he definitely comes back and he looks like he's, like, kind of blue and ethereal. So he might be a Force ghost. Wow, that's crazy. That makes this movie so much better, though. Like, I mean, the obvious tie-ins to Star Wars. Oh, my God.
So here's some fun for you.
And then the part where, like, Maverick is too close for missiles, right? And he's like, I'm too close for missiles. I'm going to put away my targeting computer. And then, like, the guy on the ground floor is like, Maverick, you put away your targeting computer. Is everything all right? And he's like, yeah, it's okay. I'm switching to guns. And they're like, oh, my gosh. Right? And so, like, he has the Force. He's, like, Force sensitive or something. I love that part. Do you remember that part, Brian?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, man, so good. I think it's, like, the fifth or sixth training mission they're on. It's another deleted scene. And I get a lot of the scenes mixed with Top Gun the Musical, too, because I've seen that a number of times.
I got a little bit of trivia there for that line. I don't know if you guys have ever noticed, but in the early days of Facebook, at the very footer, they always had that line.
A lot of your friend pages, like if you're listing your friends and stuff. Was it on every page?
I think they did a mix of, like, different Top Gun quotes.
Yeah, I did notice it, though.
Yeah, just a little and Easter egg there for you.
It's a really fun line that, like, it gets thrown in different places.
I think my favorite line is when Pete Mitchell, Maverick, they're, like, talking to him about having to hit that bullseye. And he's like, I used to bullseye womp rats in my T-16 back home. They're not bigger than 2 meters.
I think my favorite scene is, like, it's kind of weird because it's, like, a promotional movie tie-in for advertising, and I don't normally like that in movies. There's the part, though, where he goes to Charlie's house, and he gets there, and he's all sweaty and stuff, and he's like, do you mind if I hop in the shower? And she's like, yeah, I do mind. And then this is another deleted scene, so, like, you're probably familiar with that scene, but the original take is, and then his brother Paul Mitchell walks in, and he's like, not without this shampoo, you don't.
Tea tree oil.
Yeah, get in there. And then, like, he and Charlie actually, like, lock elbows with Maverick and then walk him to the shower and, like, both undress him and start kissing his neck and chest. So, again, it's a deleted scene. It's pretty far into the Blu-ray. So, like, it's deleted scene number 312, I think.
You've got to remember, too, that when we watch movies, we have to rent the VHS tapes from the video store that Jack Black runs, where he has to recreate all the movies himself.
But actually, yeah, his friend John Holmes started making some movies, too, so they just get a little weird. I don't know.
I hope you guys are kind and rewind.
We are. It's a great... Wow, this guy's a movie buff. All right. What was the name of the rapper in that movie? Is he a rapper? I think he does rap.
Yeah, he's a rapper.
He has a lot of other stuff, too. And the answer is Mos Def. Most definitely Mos Def.
Not anymore.
Isn't that a
not
planet
anymore.
On Star Wars?
What's his name? What's his name now?
I don't remember, but like, I know he changed it, because I was like, who is this? And I'm like, oh, okay.
Orlando Bloom.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Okay.
So here's some...
Okay, go ahead.
Here's some fun about the movie, by the way. Tony Scott, the director, got fired 3 times during the movie. Val Kilmer didn't want to be in the movie, but had to because he signed a contract. And the real top, this is my favorite thing, the real top gun school, the Navy top gun school, if you say, like, any line from the movie, like, you know, I have a need for speed, you get to pay, like, they have a curse jar, and you have to put a $5 bill in it. Like, if you say anything for the movie.
That's hilarious. That's my favorite trivia
so
bit about
you're
Top
saying,
Gun.
You're saying this is now a funding for the Top Gun school?
How much money do you have to pay if you buzz the tower?
They're going to pay for Top Gun 2 with that fine jar.
It explains why again, it's taken 30 years.
I post my question, how much for buzzing the tower?
I don't know. I'm guessing $5. That's a good $5, though.
You're not going to
notice
this.
You probably, like, that's the most ludicrous thing ever. Like, you're going to break your flight pattern and fly close enough to the tower to shake the windows and make a man spill coffee all over his genitalia. Like, you're not in the Navy anymore at that point. Like, you've been court-martialed.
Especially not when you go again, and then while the guy is getting done yelling about how pissed off he is about the coffee incident, he walks
he
by.
He just
and
got
then,
the bandages off. Like, then, just got the bandages off his skin.
You can literally still see some of the, like, yeah, the scald marks and the scars, like, on his face. Because it was a big cup of coffee, so it got him, like, everywhere. And then he walks into, like, I don't know, a flight intelligence intern or something carrying a tray full of coffee. And he gets hit again. It's a really funny bit. This movie's full of great comedy bits, but that was definitely one of my favorites.
So here are two things that I want to talk about with this movie, too, before we wrap up, because I've got to go here pretty quick. But can we talk about these two things? One, Tim Robbins is like 7 foot tall or something, and Tom Cruise is like 4'2". And so did you ever notice that when they get out of the planes at the end of the movie, like, they put Tom Cruise on their shoulders and, like, are cheering for him, and he's roughly the same height as Tim Robbins. Like, they try not to have them ever near each other, but, like, it's really funny. Like, so, you can just catch it for a split second there at the end.
There's probably a bit of hyperbole on both sides of that. I doubt Tim Robbins is 7 feet tall, and I know Tom Cruise is about 5'7", 5'8". But, yeah, he's not a tall man. Like, he's famously, like, made his career standing on apple crates, but...
Yeah, I'm looking up Tim Robbins' height right now. Hey, he's very tall. He's 6'5".
Okay, but yeah, that's not 7 feet.
No, it's not.
Really sad that they had
he's
to
still
put him
a monster
in jail,
man. Yeah, it is. He gets, like, court-martialed in that last scene.
He got too busy dying and still living, so.
Yeah. But still, like, I don't really get what he did other than, like, you were up there and you didn't support Maverick as much as you needed to. You're never going to be like Goose, and you're too ethnically similar to Maverick for us to not court-martial you, I guess. Because I'm trying to figure out Sundown is effectively gone after, like, the two scenes he has in the movie. And is he the only black character in the entire movie?
I think so. And like, he's, like, seriously, like, the most, like, cardboard cutout racist black person that you could have put in this movie. Like, he talks in jive. And
his call sign is Sundown. Like, the only way you could make that any worse is if it's, like, midnight. Or, like, Black Panther.
Right. It's, like, a comically bad thing from, like, a B-reel cartoon from
Sundown?
The 70s or something.
So, like, why not just call him Darkness?
Yeah, that's pretty bad, too.
Yeah, it's bad. I don't know. So, predictions for Top Gun 2. You think it's going to be about them?
Real quick, though, the other thing that I want to talk about in this movie, just before we move on, is I think we have to talk about this. So, at the end of the movie... Maverick looks at these dog tags that have Goose's name on them. he holds them in his hand, squeezes them, and then throws them overboard from the aircraft carrier. Right. Like, what kind of a jerk move is that? Like, I'm sure his widow or son wouldn't care to have his dog tags. I'm just going to throw these over the side of the ship.
Well, is that like, what it was, though? Were they gooses or were they his dad's?
That's a good question. Gooses.
I think they were both. But even still, like, I think what it was is he put a tracking device in it, and he had a pretty rough idea of where the lady from Titanic threw, like, the blue heart of the, whatever it was called, the, like, really expensive emerald that she had. She threw that into the ocean. So, like, he used that as kind of a tracking device. They're going to triangulate his dog tags. Oh. And kind of, like, James Cameron's going to go down there and look for the, I can't think of the name of the diamond right now, but Heart of the Ocean diamond. Thank you. Our future guest, my wife, and possible co-host, is letting me know it's the Heart of the Ocean.
The Heart of the Ocean. Good times.
Anyway, yeah, so predictions for Top Gun 2.
It's going to be whatever minimal plot they can fit in to have tons of dogfighting and tons of explosions and thinly veiled man crushes.
I think you're completely right in that it's going to be entirely derivative of the plot from Stealth, like the movie Stealth that no one remembers, but I think Jamie Foxx was in it and some other people. And do you remember anything about this movie at all?
No.
Okay, yeah, so it was John like a Blank. It was like a wing of pilots that flew these really advanced fighters alongside this like AI super pilot that ends up going haywire, and then they have to end up bringing it down. So I think that's probably your plot right there. And then obviously like Maverick coming to terms with his own homosexuality. And finally making love with like the force ghost of Goose.
I think that the way how this podcast needs to work long term is that we think all movies are somehow connected. Like there's one universe.
Well, before we get that far, I mean,
well, hold on.
I want to get my predictions there.
I do have a unifying theory of why that's true anyway. And we'll get to your Top Gun 2 predictions right after we get to my what people are going to call outlandish Top Gun theory, which is that the United States Air Force, within the realm of this movie, but not in real life, perpetrated these acts of having these MiGs, which are actually F-5s painted black with a red star on them. They planted them in these oceanic areas of conflict, these contested airspaces, so that we could go to war with the Russians when actually they were American planes and
false
American
flag.
Pilots. Yep, there's a inside false flag job. Thing. If you look
Michael
at it,
on it,
if you look at it, all the characters flying the MiGs have really dark tinted visors, so you can't see who's in there. Not that you would necessarily recognize the actors as being like, those are obviously American people, but it's obviously an F-5, so...
And obviously they like, got a first-person camera point of view in there on them.
And Top Gun is not the best naval aviators. I don't think that's possibly true based on the cast of characters that's there. It's the naval aviators who don't know what an F-5 looks like. So that's the only way by which they can perpetrate this plot.
And further... Jet fuel can't melt steel beams.
Right. So, exactly. Like, that fits in somehow. Yeah, so the whole universe takes place in our own universe, and it's all a plot about a false flag war against Russia. All right.
Well, another trivia thing is that, did you know that when this movie came out, there were, like, literally Navy recruiters that would sit in lobbies of movie theaters and get people to sign up? Like, how grimy is that? That's pretty messed up, I think.
That's pretty slimy. That hurts me a lot, and I think that's an actual true fact.
Who doesn't want to sign up for the Navy after this? I mean, like, you watch Top Gun, and you're like, yeah, I'm going to get in shape, go back in time 15 years, and become a fighter pilot.
Oh, yeah, exactly. That is the emotional tone of this movie, and they don't try and bore you with too many things like plot, so, like, the whole movie really is like a recruitment tool. All right, Ryan, you had a point about our predictions for Top Gun 2?
Joel brought up that we need to emphasize that we're, like, tying movies together here, and I think I have a pretty good tie-in that leads up into Top Gun 2.
Okay. I'm interested. So like a Top Gun 1.5?
Something like that. We're going to focus more on the career of Pete Mitchell and the things he goes through on his way back to the Top Gun school. So obviously, like, he goes through Top Gun, you know, and does, you know, all this awesome fighter pilot stuff, but, like, he loses a dear friend in this thing, and obviously, like, he cannot exist that well afterwards, so, like, he turns to alcoholism. which is where, like, he changes his name, you know, try to help him off. But this is where a Cocktail comes in, where he starts bartending. And I don't know if you guys have even seen that movie.
I think you're right. But then that only works for a limited amount of time before he's like so widely known as like the pilot who, you know, took down these 5 MiGs over like the ocean or whatever. Even though it was supposed to be like a classified story or whatever, it's a big deal. You know, you said like Jester said or whoever, you're going to be in the front page of every newspaper or whatever. This guy's world class famous, right? So it becomes a problem.
Yeah, but famous people never hit rock bottom. So I guess you're, you know, technically correct here.
Exactly. And so what they have to do is they have to end up freezing him and putting him in like a state of stasis, and like so he's actually just in his own mind. And that's they made a movie about that called Vanilla Sky.
Well, they actually the Cocktail thing, it plays out because he has to learn all these like dangerous maneuvers, much like Top Gun. With his cocktail equipment, in order to distract people from the fact that he is Pete Mitchell.
Right. And, like, again, it's, I don't know, maybe he's supposed to just be a low-key, you know, cocktail bartender, but he can't do it. You know what I mean? Like, he's always going to be the flash and the glitz and the glam of all these like, risky maneuvers and stuff. So he always is about taking it to the edge,
yeah,
to the border.
But I doomed Pete Mitchell, again, in Cocktail, loses a dear friend in the end. And he realizes that like he cannot exist with people. He's a bad luck charm or something. So he gets suicidal and then turns to the closest dangerous thing that he can think of, and that's NASCAR racing in Days of Thunder.
Oh, you're right. That does have to happen before Vanilla Sky, because the whole idea of Vanilla Sky is that at this point he's the world's most well-known man. And that's why he has to go into, like, hiding, into, like, hyperstasis, like, cryogenically frozen state. Well,
before that, though, he's got to make some money. And so that's why he becomes, like, a world-class sports agent for a while, too. To, like, try and get the money to afford the stasis chamber.
So I'm confused. Like, so he's, like, the greatest pilot of all time. That's what allows him to be, like, a NASCAR driver that takes it to the next level, right? Who pushes the envelope on the racetrack, right? But he doesn't have any knowledge about like the terminology for racing cars and stuff. I guess that actually makes perfect sense, right? Because he's a fighter pilot.
There are so many episodes of this podcast that we're gonna have to do.
Oh my god!
But the fact that his name is Cole Trickle and like he's supposed to be like Dick Trickle's son, maybe, I don't know. Like that's funny too.
I mean, it's obviously a fake name. Like Dick Trickle's a fake name, so it's like his whole family has to go into witness protection. I think he's like. His dad just beat him to it by like half a second. He's like, Dick Trickle. I want to be Dick Trickle. And he's like, I guess I'll be Cole Trickle. I don't know. Is that funny?
You might be killed. Like you've just made a lot of Dick Trickle fans upset by saying he has a fake name. What's he mean? Dick Trickle's got a fake name. Dick Trickle, number 47, my man.
I think I can, I think I can fight most Dick Trickle fans. I think he's like 70. So let me see. I could take on an army of no less than 10 Dick Trickle fans, probably, even at my considerable size and relative being out of shape.
This is a good chance for us to do some cross-promotion on the network here. Well, Brian and I shouldn't have said
that because he died. He died back in 2013, so.
Brian and I have the Dick Trickle cast, if you guys are looking for that. Where we recap all of Dick Trickle's races that he did over the course of his career. So
yeah, starting from the beginning, I think we're on what race 4?
Talladega 68 is where we're at.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah, that's it.
You guys will have to correct me if I'm wrong. I think he places 26th in that race. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Technically, yes. But if you ask people who were there, there was a miscalculation in lapping, and so he actually won.
Well, I know
it's a very controversial race, yeah.
He did have the fastest lap. That's a well-maintained record on that. It was in the qualifiers, but that had to be thrown out too, I think, because they thought it was a computer error, because his lap time was 20 seconds faster than anyone else's. But it wasn't an error at all. It's just he's a Dick Trickle. Anyway.
They checked the vacuum tubes and punch cards on those 1968 computers, and sure enough, there it was.
Well, we all know now. Anyway, yeah, that's what was the name of your guys' Dick Trickle podcast? I forgot.
The Trickle Cast.
Oh, okay.
Brought to you by Viagra.
of course. So look for that coming tentatively, right? Because you guys are still kind of developing that, putting it together.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's going to take a little while, but it's going to be a massive hit. So anything else to say about Top Gun 2 before we sign off here?
No, this has been the silliest podcast I think I've ever been involved with.
Well, we should talk to at least the point that the writer of the first movie, writer-director, you said his name earlier.
Tony Scott.
So he recently committed suicide, which is sad. And it really is sad. And I don't think it has anything to do with Top Gun 2.
There's been a lot of silly things that we've said in this podcast, but the Top Gun 2 thing is not silly. Like, they are working actively to try and make Top Gun 2 right now.
I will see it in theaters, I guarantee you. I've watched Top Gun. You guys can probably tell based on my knowledge and ability to pull weird lines and stuff out, I've seen this movie no less than 40 times.
Yeah, and the thing about Top Gun is, like, it's campy. Like, it's definitely a campy movie. But ask any adult male between the ages of 25 and 45 what their top 10 favorite movies are, and there's a really good chance Top Gun's on there.
Yeah, I'd agree.
I think it just puts you in a state of mind. That's what it is. Like, it's everyone wants to feel that masculinity, and, like, they would live vicariously through Maverick or whatever their favorite pilot is, really. So it's a good movie for that reason. It just captures a feeling, maybe even more than a feeling. I don't know. Anyway.
That's what Boston says.
That's what they wrote that song about. All right, I think that's going to do it for me for Top Gun 2. Joel, you didn't have any final remarks, did you?
No, I think this is a fun show to do. Very silly. Enjoy your editing. I think it's going to be a real fun.
I've enjoyed this. I think this is I'm going to have as much passion for this as Enlightened Gamer. So expect to see a lot of content hopefully coming out by the time this thing gets developed. I think in the future we're going to be talking a lot of more outlandish theories, and we're going to be talking something that I really want to do, and I hope you guys are on board for. I want to pitch some movies. The first one I think we're going to do, it would be Winnebago Man, and I want to kind of provide some context for that viral video and say the best way you can make a screenplay out of that movie or out of that viral video, and we'll just kind of theory craft that on the air. So Joel, you're the one who familiarized me with Winnebago Man. Can I count on you for that episode?
I'll be there. But I think in the same vein, let's close with this. Top Gun 2, we all know that Maverick and Iceman are going to be the old guys. Who are the young guys going to be cast in this movie? And I'm pretty sure I've got the best star of this movie as the Maverick-type character. My Maverick for this movie, for Top Gun 2, Jonah Hill. Name a better Maverick than Jonah Hill.
I will do my best. Let me see.
And I want 300 pounds Sarah, super bad Jonah Bill.
My gosh. The sequel to Superbad is Top Gun 2.
There we go. It might happen.
It's what happened after those guys finished high school.
Okay, hold on. No.
Fighter pilots.
That's fine. And you know what it is? Top Gun 2 is not the movie everyone thinks it is. It's literally Iceman and Maverick through, like, a series of folly and, like, poor choices in their own lives. Like, obviously, Iceman finds an addiction to food, and Maverick just keeps on with his renegade piloting. So they literally run a company that flies rubber dog shit from Hong Kong to different places in the world. And, so Michael Cera and Jonah Hill start their new job. It's their first day on the job for this delivery company where they're flying a plane, delivering rubber dog shit.
That might be a better version than what actually comes out.
If that doesn't ever happen, I want that to be Top Gun 3. And you heard it here first. Anyone who wants to approach me for that idea, I'll write the screenplay. I don't care.
The only reason why Jonah Hill's doing it is because he's trying to understand, like, the dog shit trade in order to better increase the batting average of Jason Giambi.
Yep, he's coming out of retirement. And the finisher for that movie, he ends up going against he's the pitcher who's an asshole and, like, threw a part of a bat at him. His name's Roger or something. Maybe I'm off on that. Famous steroid pitcher of the same era as Roger Clemens. There you go. So yeah, he comes back. It's Rocky VI is basically Roger Clemens and Jason Giambi both come out of retirement for one final showdown.
There's another Rocky movie coming out called Apollo, right?
Creed. It's actually. Out, and it's actually Creed. Fantastic. I want to go see
it. Is it?
Yeah, everything I've heard is like that movie is the best in the series. And I think Sylvester Stallone finally does what he should have done probably for a while now, where he's like, I'm going to be the corner guy. Like, I'm going to be that, I don't know the name of the actor, but the black guy who's been the corner guy in the last few Rocky movies. And Rocky's going to be like, I'm good at giving like the dramatic monologue and stuff. And like, this would definitely throw off the whole allegations of racism. So I think that was a Hulk Hogan thing. I think Hulk Hogan got it in some hot water about being racist. But anyway, I've heard Creed is fantastic. I'm really excited to go see it. My wife is actually a big fan of the Rocky series, so maybe that'll be something in our near future.
To wrap everything together and put a nice pin in it, I'm gonna say that this ties into Rocky. This podcast was brought to you by Burger King. What a great place. They let you get all the refills you want for free.
It really is. I think that's gonna do it for us. Thanks for joining us. This has been Let's Talk Movies, I guess.
We sort of talked about movies.
I think that's the idea. If anyone's curious about the title, it's both the idea that there doesn't need to be another movie podcast in the world, and we're probably going to get more off tangent on this one than we do in Leighton Gamer. So thanks for joining us, I guess. See you next time.